welcome to Future Library. It's episode 31. Amazingly, I actually know the episode number this time because I have got them on screen, all the ones in front of this one, so I know where I am. It's another one of the ones that are being recorded before Christmas, but then coming out in the new year. So again, as I've said on previous episodes, if there's been some kind of global catastrophe that's happened between this being recorded and it coming out, then it's maybe going to be a bit weird because I'm not going to discuss it. So if that thing has happened, then what can I say? Wasn't that awful? Or if something great has happened, then wasn't that great? Or if maybe if aliens have turned up and we've all been kind of brought into a super amazing galactic civilization, then wow, I hope you're enjoying this, listening to it in space. Right. I also have to apologise because I have got a bit of a cough, so I'm just going to do a quick cough. Right, hopefully I'll be able to turn the volume down a little bit when I do that, so it won't be too disgusting for listeners. Got a guest again, obviously, because as I've said before as well, it would just be me wittering on to myself at length if I didn't have a guest. But this week's guest is a chap called Derek Johnston. He's a Scottish musician. He runs Make That A Take Records. He plays in the band Uniforms. He is also involved in the Book Your Ain Fest. He's an all-round renaissance man, I would say. Derek, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
And this is your first ever experience of Skype?
It is, indeed. I installed it especially so we could have this conversation.
You see, this is the thing. When I first contacted Derek, listeners, and Derek said, oh, I don't use Skype. Now, some people, there's a very small number of people that don't use Skype on principle. Not sure what the principle is. Maybe the principle of not being able to talk to other people for free. Not sure why that would be. But, you know, some people don't like Microsoft or Skype or, you know, whatever. But Derek was just one of these people who never used it. So he was quite happy to dive into the waters of new software. And apparently I'm his only contact on there at the moment. So are you finding the experience of Skype exciting so far?
It's definitely not a negative experience. I'm still kind of in the twilight zone, if you will. You know, getting used to it. I've got my washing machine on. I'm having a cup of tea, and I kind of feel like I'm talking to your picture.
Yes, well, that is something that happens. I mean, I find myself sitting kind of talking to the picture, but then I find myself kind of clicking around my desktop looking at other bits and bobs and finding other bits of information to make it look like I've done a lot of research, whereas right. In fact, I'm just reading things as I go along. But rather than me show the paucity of my research right now, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, myself personally, my name is Derek Johnston. I'm 31 years old. I live in Perth. I play guitar and sing in a punk rock band called Uniforms. I'm part of the Make That A Take Records collective. We put on shows, put out music, do downloads, and we've been doing that in various forms since about 2005 or something, was when it kind of all started. We do Book Your Ain Fest every year now, and we've just a couple of weeks ago wrapped up Book Your Ain Fest 7, and we're already kind of between us starting to rumble about what's going to be happening next year.
Fantastic. So the Book Your Ain Fest, for listeners who are unaware, it's kind of a mini festival, would you say?
I think it started mini. It doesn't feel so mini now.
Is it becoming slightly kind of medium festival now?
Yes, it's definitely busy. It's kind of grown, I feel, naturally over time. There was no design. We never ever sat down and thought, right, this is what we're going to do. In the very first instance, I was just booking a weekend of shows for my old band, Joey Terrifying, and we had a Perth gig, and it kind of rolled from there. Yeah, so it kind of happened by accident, but it was a happy accident, I guess.
So are you still at... give us a little bit of background about how it works now. Is it over multiple nights and multiple venues, or are you in one venue and multiple nights, or multiple venues of the same night? How does it hang together these days?
Right, this year just passed was the busiest, the kind of biggest we've ever kind of done. It was the first time it was... we've been 3 days for 3 years now. But this was the first... This was kind of a double first. It was the first time that we were in Cage, for all 3 days, but it was also the first time that we ran shows before Cage opened, and we had a pre-fest in Edinburgh as well. So it's kind of every year there's been an addition. First two fests were in Perth, then we moved on to Dundee for Bucharest Fest 3, and then we had four. Bucharest Fest 5 was the first time that it went to 3 days, and it's just kind of developed from there.
Now, I know from experience myself that these things are remarkably tiring to put together. They're one of these things that seems from the audience's point of view to kind of be fairly effortless, but there's a lot that goes on in the background. For anybody who's not aware, I ran the Unseen Festival in Dundee for a few years, which I think that was started out in Birmingham as a two-night thing, and then three nights, and then it went up. I took it up to Scotland with me when I moved away from Birmingham. And then, yeah, that went from three nights. I think the longest was four nights. And we used to do it at Druth in Ebers in Dundee. And it's a job and a half getting these things organised. And you seem to spend, for that week I found of doing it, you find yourself doing nothing but thinking about it and organising things and talking to bands. And, you know, and this was, I was doing this pre-internet, so it was quite... A lot of phone calls. So I imagine it's a little bit easier with the internet, but what's your experience of doing it? Do you find that during the week it sort of goes past in a blur, or what would you say about it?
Well, I'd say the first lesson that I have learned is don't lose your phone on the first night of your three-day fest, which I did at Bucharest Fest 5, which made it difficult by so much more margin than it should have been. Due to my own idiocy. But while it's actually happening, we're also, like, my band's usually playing. I'll probably play. I like doing, like, little pop-up shows and just showing up with my acoustic and being obnoxious. That's just kind of part of who I am, I suppose. But it kind of all flies by. Like, this fest, I think we had 42 acts in total.
Right.
And I think I got to see maybe three full sets across the whole weekend.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky in a way with the Druthy stuff, because I got to see everybody, well, hear everybody, because I was sat just by the entrance to the downstairs basement, and certainly nowhere near as many bands as that. You know, I put like three or four on a night. So, I mean, if you've had that many bands play, do you have quite a lot of acts playing the same evening?
On the Friday night, we had a pre-fest at Henry's Coffee House on the Seagate in Dundee. That was an acoustic show. We had Gone Wishing, Mark McCabe, Andy Thomas, Turtle Lamone. I played as well. And then at 7, that's when the doors at Cage opened, and the first band, Maxwell's Dead, were on at 7:15. So then we ran, I think it was 6 bands on the Friday night. And then we had a pre-fest again on the Saturday at Cerberus Bar, acoustic. We had the Murder Burgers playing acoustic there. A Hopeless Cause, Little Anchors, great little kind of boozy breakfast, kind of boozy brunch show or something like that. And then at 2 o'clock, doors of Cage open. We had the kind of main stage upstairs and the acoustic stage downstairs, and we're running stages from 2:30 until about 11:30 at night.
Do you find, I mean, I used to find that one of the problems that I had with it was that some bands didn't seem to understand the concept of timing and when they're supposed to be on and when they're supposed to finish. Have you had that kind of experience at all? Obviously, I'm not going to say name the names and name and shame, but I think you will have been exceptionally lucky if you haven't experienced that. But I may be wrong. So what has your experience been there?
Well, I think if anybody is exceptionally lucky, it's me, because Make That a Take isn't just me by any stretch of the imagination. We are a collective. We've been doing this together for quite a long time now, and we've learnt from our mistakes. And Michael Lindsay is the one that, and Johnny from my band, Johnny Domino, they basically are the stage managers, if you will.
Right.
I tend to be more kind of liaise with the bands and do the timetable and stuff, and I'll kind of do that background work. But when it comes to the actual day of the fest or the weekend of the fest itself, it's like, right, everybody's got their timetable, everybody knows what they're doing. Which is kind of a bonus for me, because if someone complains about time or something, I was like, not in charge of it. I can hand it over to Michael and Johnny, who I'm a bit of a soft touch. So I'm glad that I have those guys to help me do that. We haven't had any, that said, actually, we haven't had any major incidents before. Every fest, there's kind of like niggly little things. But there's never been a drama.
No. That's good. I mean, I think there's always going to be the band that just goes, oh, just one more song. You know, oh, we've just got a short one to play. And then they play like a 12-minute epic.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, God.
It's never been that bad. No. And I think that one of the most unique and positive things about Bucharain Fest is that kind of everybody knows what it's about.
Yeah.
It's a fundraiser for safety. We've got our roots, kind of deep roots, if you will. Safety is a Perth-based water safety charity
that
was founded in 2006 after the death of Graham Motion.
Yes, he was a regular poster on the underground scene board,
absolutely.
I remember.
And Graham played drums for Allergo and was in a whole host of local bands, and was a kind of inspirational figure, you know. And his friends, the PCC, they ran an all-dayer in September 2006, and they ran an all-dayer at the old Barcode, and I was working on the bar that day, and I knew the guys, and they did it again the next year to do a fundraiser for Safe Tay, which had been founded by Lisa, Graham's sister, after he passed. And then they did it again in 2007. And then that's kind of how the whole Bucharain Fest came about, really, because next year was 2008. And like, we were all in bands and stuff. And I asked Graham's friends if they were going to be doing a third. And they were kind of unsure about how that was going to go. So I was like, well, we're going to do this kind of half-dayer, which then kind of grew to an all-dayer. It was at Mucky Mulligan's, and I was kind of putting on shows there anyway. So I kind of pushed my luck a little bit and was like, can we make this an all-dayer? And everybody came together, and I thought the only thing that we can do, not the only thing I can do, but the right thing to do was to do it as a fundraiser for safety.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just for the sake of listeners who are unaware of what the situation was there, which I'm aware there are some now, as the listenership of the podcast seems to be growing quite rapidly. Yet again, I will say thank you for people for actually listening. The situation with Graham Motion was that, I believe, wasn't he out for a night out in Perth?
Yes.
And somehow ended up falling in the Tay and drowned. Unfortunately, so and that's pretty much what happened, and it was a weird experience for a lot of people, because I think it was the first experience a lot of people had of one of their peer group dying, and certainly somebody who was posting regularly on a local message board for musicians, and it was a kind of an odd experience, you know, being able to pinpoint his final post on there, and it, you know, there's no intimation, because there never is with these things, you know, it's just a standard post about some, you know, completely irrelevant and unimportant thing, and then that's just the last one. And so, yeah, doing the Safe Tay thing. So what are the goals of Safe Tay? Because obviously I'm guessing that they're trying to make people aware that there's this quite dangerous river running through several cities.
Well, the issue is as old as Perth itself, and safety seeks to, well, on a purely physical level, all the kind of water safety points that you see up and down the River Tay, there's life rings and guy ropes and all the safety equipment that you see along like the cycle tracks, along the Tay, along the walks, along the Tay, they provide safety equipment and life-saving equipment, but they also seek to educate about water safety and the dangers of mixing alcohol and drugs with water. And in recent years, they've been supporting the Tayside Mountain Rescue Service as well. As regards like what happens with the money that, that we raise, we are more than happy to turn it over to Safe Tay. And for the past couple of years, they've been supporting Tayside Mountain Rescue, which is also Tayside Water Rescue, obviously up towards, well, the whole of the river, and then you've got Aberfeldy, Pitlochry, and all up that kind of way. So Safe Tay is kind of spread out with its work from a Perth centre, if you will, and it's kind of moved throughout the whole.
So were there not any kind of safety, was there no safety equipment before they started?
There was. I'm not an expert on exactly what the provision was. There was provision.
See, I can vaguely remember from trips to Perth that there were some kind of, you know, your kind of standard life-saving rings and with, you know, tied to rope and stuff. I don't remember them being in particularly good condition. And then I don't remember there being a lot of them, but I do remember there being some. So I might take it that Safe Tay have now dramatically improved that situation.
Dramatically, yes. And one of the key issues was on the night of Graham's death, the life-saving equipment that was actually there had been vandalised.
Right.
So that's a big step in the kind of educational side of things. Because obviously the more you know...
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully it's the kind of thing that would educate people into not being fucking pricks and... vandalising life-saving equipment. Well, I mean, you have to wonder what kind of complete bellend thinks that's a good idea. It's just, you know, it's awful to think that the people who vandalised that could have, you know, potentially caused somebody's death. So, you know, what seems like a laugh at the time, let's break this for no reason, suddenly turns into, it's not so much fun when somebody's died. And I think that's really... Yeah, I think it's important that that kind of thing is, you know, if you're educating those people not to be total twats, then I think that's a very useful thing to do as well.
So, I think the most important thing is to raise awareness.
Yes.
There's always going to be idiocy and vandalism, and that's just part of the curse of the human condition, or however you want to phrase it. And yes, we can get upset about these things, and yes, it's obviously an issue and a tragic waste, but the only positive thing we can really do is try and raise that awareness, have the physical like life-saving equipment there, seek to educate, and beyond that, I don't think there's... You can't account for idiocy and the way that some people are.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think the thing is that there's, you know, obviously time can't be reversed, so you have to look at a positive way of you know, making things better going forward. And I think what you're saying, that Safe Tay and the involvement of Book Your Aim Fest is a positive way to address that. So, you know, and it's, so what would you say if somebody was wanting to organise a festival for themselves, what would your advice be?
I don't know if I'd be one to be dishing out advice. When we did it, we were just flying by the seat of our pants, and to a certain extent, that's exactly what we're still doing. I guess if you have the idea, I think it's even in the name of Book Your Aim Fest, if you have the idea and you think you could do it, then the only thing is to do it. I think it's something that's hard to explain when you're asked that question, and it's not something that I'm really kind of used to thinking about, because I don't think about it as, all right, I've got to do this or that. I think the more you do it, the more organically it comes together. But my advice would be, if someone wants to do something or put on a fest, then do it. Just go ahead and do it. Don't wait for someone else to say, right, we want to do this. If it's your idea and you want to do it, then speak to the people that can help you and go and do it.
So how would you say to somebody if they were wanting to, you know, book their own fest, if they were wanting to start putting things together, how would you suggest to somebody to start?
I guess it's just like, how would you suggest to someone who's wanting to put on shows for the first time?
Yeah.
I and we as a collective have learned from our mistakes, really. The first shows that I ever put on, it's kind of, I'm deeply entrenched in it. It's almost like kind of an unquestioning faith. Michael and I grew up in Aileth, East Highland, Perthshire, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly. And we had our first bands when we were like 13. I would have been like kind of 13, Michael would have been 14. And there wasn't any place for us to play, so we used to play gigs in guide huts and town halls and stuff like that. And we didn't really have anybody to help us. There was kind of bands that we looked up to. Tennessee Kate were one of those bands. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know what we were doing. So we put on shows and just whatever that we could, and we would play back garden shows in my house, and we just play whatever we could. And the only thing that we could do was like, right, we have our gear, we have a place, we have a PA, boom, there's the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we kind of spent a long time fumbling in the dark, but we kind of learned over time. It's been a long time. We've been doing it in some way, shape or form for about kind of half our lives. So I wouldn't say I'm an authority on the matter by any stretch of the imagination, but if you just kind of stick to your guns, all you need is a band or a guitar, and you don't even need a stage or a PA. If you've got an acoustic guitar, get a space and play it.
Yeah, because I think you've had, am I right in thinking you've had Ghost Mice play in the past? Because I know I remember putting them on in Dundee, and I know they have played in Dundee again since.
Yeah, they played twice.
Yeah.
Well, Chris has played in Dundee three times. The first one was in Druthies, actually. Yeah. The first time we put them on.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the year. It must have been 2007, perhaps.
Yeah, because I think I put them on about 2003 or 2004.
Right,
they came and stayed.
It would have been around 2006, 2007 was the first time.
Yeah.
And then Chris came back by himself, I think it was maybe 2010. And then we had Ghost Mice, as Ghost Mice, over again earlier on this year. It's the summer that they did the view.
And they're a good example of a band that, when I put them on, didn't use the PA at all. So, you know, they're a good example of you can just stand there and play. I think one of the things that Dundee's quite lucky for, and maybe Scotland as a whole, is that there's a lot of venues available and venues that are willing to take a chance on things. I think some other places find it more difficult, and other musicians find it harder to find kind of sympathetic venues. Do you think you've been quite lucky with the venues in the area you're in?
I think so on the whole. Dundee's got some great venues, and I guess a lot of it comes down to trial and error as well. We've had lots of positive experiences, but we've had some negative experiences too. But that's something that we've learned over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And I think, like, our relationship with Cage Nightclub can't be understated.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny, that runs the club, and Dave, his partner, business partner, we've got a great relationship with them, and it's a long relationship, and we know exactly, we know that we can count on each other, and they are super supportive of what we do, and to have friends on side, with everybody pulling in the same direction is probably one of the greatest blessings that we have, as not just as a collective, but as Dundee and Tayside as a scene as a whole.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things. I mean, I think there's always been, I mean, my experience when I first came up there at the end of the 90s was that there seemed to be already a good existing relationship between musicians and venues, and it seemed to have been one that kind of gets passed on from each kind of, for want of a better way of putting it, from each generation to the next, is that the venues kind of have an understanding that the bands won't be dicks to them, and that they shouldn't be dicks to the bands. And that seems to have been something that's been an ongoing thing. You get the occasional blip where somebody will come in from outside the city, not quite understand how this has always worked, and will screw things up for a little bit. I mean, I remember at one point, Druthy's had a new manager came in, and she didn't understand how the relationship worked at all. Mm. And she felt that music was, you know, just background for her drinkers. It's like, you know, that it's, well, that's not really what it's for. And she didn't last a long time, to be honest. But I think overall it's been quite positive, the experience that I had there, that there's always been places, no matter what you're playing and how difficult the music you're playing, you'll always find somewhere to play, which is good. And the other thing I was going to ask you about, because the licensing laws in England changed a little while ago, to mean that you didn't have to have a music license to have performances in venues of less than 200 people,
right,
which obviously make things a lot easier. And I know that that didn't change in Scottish law. Now, is Scottish licensing law different? Because I never really looked into it, because I never really thought about it while I was up there, because it was never an issue. Because I know there's a lot more house shows that tends to be in Scotland, and I'm guessing you're not having to get... You're not having to ever get licences for those shows. So is it a case that you don't need a licence below a certain size?
You know what, I'm going to have to confess, ignorance. To be honest, as far as I'm aware, no licensing laws have changed. Mm-hmm. And I have never, ever inquired about a licence as regards a show. I don't know, it's quite a stumped question. House shows, that's kind of... It seems to be something that's grown a lot more recently, but I can't really explain why that would be. I mean, we've done house shows for we don't do them often, but we used to do house shows all the time back in like 2006, 2007 when we got started. And there was no thought about, all right, can we get away with this? We just went ahead and did it out of sheer bloody mindedness, or perhaps not even just thinking about it at all. But as you say, like, we're so lucky up here that there's always been venues to play. Like, I remember playing shows when I was really young, when I was 16, at like the Old Westie, and you were talking about it being passed down from the generations. Mm-hmm. That was like my first exposure to Dundee and the music scene. It was like my 16th birthday, actually. Played at the Old Westport in 1998. Mm-hmm. We're on the bill with Tennessee Kate, Mercury Tilt Switch, and someone else, I can't remember who. And that was kind of my first exposure to the DIY scene, and Dundee was the kind of city when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first exposure to it. And then obviously the Westie closed, and that was obviously gutted, you know, like that was kind of a travesty. And then things kind of moved around. Then there was stuff at the Beat Bar that we were involved in. Then all the guys that were on underground scene, and there was the Cotton Club for a while. And it all kind of seems to, you're right, it always seems to kind of bounce.
Mm-hmm.
Bounce back and kind of come and go. And even if these places have disappeared, there's almost always been somewhere else that's popped up.
Yeah, and they always seem to pop up under the understanding that they always seem to understand how the scene locally works. Which I think is one of these things, and I've said it on the podcast before, that I think people inside Dundee sometimes don't realise how lucky they are to have the situation they've got, because it isn't the case everywhere else in the country. You could have almost reached the point where you just assume it's going to be like that everywhere. And it's one of the reasons why I'm disappointed that Dundee didn't get City of Culture, because it's had this kind of almost kind of this is just how it is attitude for so long that it seemed to have been the ideal place to be a City of Culture.
Mm.
And, you know, it would have given the council's been quite forward thinking over the years with it, but it would have given the council a chance to put more money into it and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, I know that they used to have the poster boards up around the city centre. Do they still do that?
They do, yeah. And it's great. I mean, we've had some hilarious, well, I guess to us, hilarious kind of inside joke posters.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like, it's Jamie from Uniforms that does all our artwork and stuff. And Jamie's one of, obviously my band, or like my best friend. We've obviously got our own stupid jokes and stuff. And we've had some ridiculous posters up there on the boards. And the council have been doing that for as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I guess they don't have to do that. But it's a positive thing, like you say, like the council. I've never really had any dealings with the council. And the irony of the whole thing is that I've never lived in Dundee. So I would never want to paint myself as any sort of spokesperson for Dundee or the Dundee scene, and I'm certainly not a paragon of virtue when it comes to anything else. But one thing I can say is that on the whole, it's been an overwhelmingly positive environment for making music, for developing both. Well, not just developing both, like so many things have developed. Developing friendships is, I think, the premium of premium importance, and developing these relationships with getting to know people that make music, that understand and such a massive scale of different sort of music in Dundee, and it's all DIY. It's like kind of like the Make That A Take tagline, I guess, a lazy one that I just wrote it on a Facebook years ago. It's all punk to me, mm-hmm. is what I said. And like, you can take, like, there's such a broad range of artists that everybody's out together, whether it's punk rock or not, mm-hmm. In sound. And it's always been a kind of really supportive place. I think Dundee's quite unique. Dundee is unique in many ways, and there's a kind of unity and togetherness. I mean, it's not always kind of overstated. It's not like a boys' club or an old lads' club or anything like that. It's very open and fluid, and people just seem to have a fundamental respect in the artistic community for what everybody else is doing, and everybody seems really supportive. You've got like the Rusty Hip guys who do so much and create Dundee and the whole movement around the DCA and the Art Bar and Tin Roof and all these massive, like, these fantastic projects. And they all kind of converge, and it's all, the art informs the music, and it's all part of this, as you say, I suppose, like this cultural, I was just about to use the phrase cultural togetherness. Which is kind of funny and sappy in a way, but definitely elements of that.
I think what you're saying is, it gives a good example, because, I mean, obviously listeners to the podcast are going to be kind of wondering why I so often kind of end up going back to talking to people from Dundee. And I think it's because it's one of those places that once you've been involved with it, you can leave it and you can be away from it for a very, very long time, but you never kind of fully leave it behind. It's something that even when people have left, if they then come back for a visit or something, they're kind of treated as if they've never been away, and, you know, greeted with open arms and stuff. And it's a city that's, I think it's one that's quite difficult to leave behind because of the kind of sense of community. And sometimes when you're there, you kind of start going, well, you know, it's you know, these things annoy me about it, these things annoy me about it. But once you've got that little bit of space, you kind of think, well, actually, it's great. And I think it's one of these cities, I think it should be one of these cities that's seen kind of on the world stage as being very culturally important. And I don't know if that would damage it somehow if it became like the new Seattle or the new Los Angeles or something. And I don't think it ever will do that. And I think it's doomed or blessed with the fact that it's going to just trundle along forever, just being its little kind of bubble of creativity. And much as I'd like to see more people aware of it, whether that happens or not is another matter. But, you know, hopefully by continuing to talk to people over the years while I do the podcast and more people listen to the show, people start to investigate what's going on there. So if people want to investigate your work, Derek, and the work you're involved in, where would they go online to find that information out?
I guess the place to start is with the music. To me, that's always been the most important thing. So start with the music, makethatatakerecords.bandcamp.com. would be the go-to place. That's got links to, in fact, I'm sitting in front of my PC at the moment, I can tell you exactly. It's got links to the Facebook, the Twitter, YouTube. The channel's called Cowpunk TV, and that's, I think those videos dating back like kind of 5 or 6 years.
Are they live videos of shows in Dundee and around the area?
Just all live videos that I've taken, not exclusively Make That A Take shows, shows in Dundee, shows in Glasgow, some shows in Edinburgh, some shows in the States, some videos of uniforms, some videos of acts that Make That A Take have worked with. I think there's well over 300 there.
Wow.
These days, it's just kind of, I used to be a lot more prolific with putting the videos up, I guess, when I maybe had a little more time on my hands. So I'm kind of, there's always stuff going up, because when I get like a spare hour, I'll maybe just dip into the archive and stick something in there. But there's like big bands, little bands, and kind of everything in between.
Fantastic. And if they were, so, and if they wanted to find out when the next Book Your Aim Fest is, what would they do to find that out?
I guess the best place to go is the Facebook. I'm afraid to say we don't have our own site because we're clearly lazy and not on point. I'm sure we'll get around to that. It's something we've talked about for ages, but it's kind of like something else always comes up, or there's another show to worry about, or we're worried about a record, or whatever the case may be. So the Facebook, it's just Make That A Take Records. I do a zine, like kind of an online e-zine type thing called Write Your Aim Zine, which you can find at writeyouraimzine.wordpress.com. I must stress that I write that blog as me, as Derek, not as a spokesperson for Make That A Take. Because even though we are a united collective, there are 8 different voices involved. So I wouldn't want to lay claim to being a spokesperson for our collective really any more than I would like to claim to be a spokesperson for Dundee. Book Your Aim Fest 8, though, we decided on the dates already. It's going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 28th. 29th and 30th of November.
Fantastic. So you've still got quite a long way to go before we get to it. It gives people plenty of time to organise getting there if they decide to go. So, what I will do is I will put links to all those things into the information about the podcast. Before we draw things to a close, is there anything you'd like to add, Derek?
Thank you very much for inviting me to be on the podcast.
You're very welcome. It's very nice to speak to you. Yeah, so if anybody wants to know more about Derek's work, do look at the links that will be posted in the information. If you've downloaded this from iTunes, the information may not be as easy to find, so go to futurelibrary.co.uk, which will then link to other places where you can get it. Or drop me a line if you need to. My details are at the end of the show. So it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I probably should have made you aware of this at the beginning. Once we finish, stay on the line just for a minute. It sounds like somebody off, like a phone-in show, don't I? Oh, if you stay on the line, you'll talk to one of the ladies, we'll get your prize to you. So all that's left to say then is, Derek, thank you very much for speaking to me. That's another Future Library finish, and all that's left to say is a Future Library goodbye. Goodbye!
Naturally arise when a flame goes out, being sexy.
Future Library is brought to you by petpiranha.com, where you can go and find out various things about people who we've talked about and various people who haven't been on the podcast yet, but might be in the future. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's twitter.com/futurelibrary1, so that's Future Library with a number one. And you can email me at alexbottom@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe via iTunes. Just search for Future Library there. That's it. Thanks.